Remember to celebrate how far you have come. Are you really not better than you were 5 years ago? Really? What have you learned? How far have you come? What have you done? If you're struggling right now in your business, 5 years ago, you hadn't started a business, and the biggest thing that you did 3 years ago was start a business. You're like, you started a business. You were brave enough to put your name out there, to put your idea out there. You put your money into it. Maybe you had to borrow some money to put into it. Like, that was gutsy. And you did it. And okay, so you're hitting a dry spot. This is tough right now. But it doesn't mean that you suck. It means that you're hitting a tough spot. Welcome to business. That always happens. And so this is just new for you. Or it hasn't taken off in the way that you had hoped. And so maybe we just need to come at it from a different perspective, or try some different things, or cut costs, or add a new product line in, or whatever we're doing, right? Like, we just need to figure out the next thing.
Welcome, fellow entrepreneurs and goal getters, to Entrepreneurial Elevation, Unleashing Greatness Within, with myself, your host, Kelly Beveridge, and my guest today, Jonathan Bennett. And Jonathan's residing in Ontario, Canada. Such a great guy. Just actually, full transparency, was meeting him this morning. We're just sitting here chatting on a Monday morning. He is an advisor and executive coach for purpose-driven leaders who need help solving their organization's toughest obstacles. I love this. We're going to dive in today about navigating the pressures of leadership. He has so much experience across urban, rural, remote, First Nations communities, and his expertise is in social purpose, business strategy, governance change, and communication. He also has over 25 years experience himself in leadership success as a CEO, board member, and founder. So you are the guy, Jonathan, to talk about leadership. You've also published 7 books, which is really cool. So just really excited to have you here. Thanks for being on the episode.
It's great to be here, Kelly. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. And okay, so we're going to talk about navigating the pressures of leadership. I think this is a great topic, especially for my audience, because most of my audience are founders, they're entrepreneurs and business people. And we just step into this role of leadership, I think sometimes without realizing what comes with it. Yeah. And so I'm just experienced. I'm curious, you have such a wide range of experience. How have those environments and experiences, I would say, one, shaped your understanding of leadership, and then two, the pressures that come with it?
Yeah, what a great place to start. I started my career having really strangely close proximity to the most senior leaders in organizations. I started right out of university. I was an executive kind of assistant to a CEO and publisher of a large Canadian publishing company. It was a dream job for me at the time. I was naive, right? I didn't really know what was going on. And I learned everything, all about the workforce and everything else. It was in all of those meetings. There's nothing like taking minutes for paying very close attention to what's happening in a room around board, senior teams and board tables. And so it was just a really lovely apprenticeship that I to have. And I was present when big decisions were being made. And I learned when they were good and when they weren't, and what the interplay and the dynamics were like. Over the years, I moved on. I moved into a kind of communications career. So again, I was very close to CEOs the whole time and started giving them advice, started scripting their words and their language and working with them, got close to doing lots of media and that kind of thing. And eventually I ended up on the senior team of a large hospital. And so I started to become the person doing the talking myself, obviously still gave lots of advice and counsel to boards and to the CEO. But it was during that time that I think I learned the most about decision making, about how to communicate decisions, about how to communicate change management. And that's has had me stand in good stead for the following 15 years of my career.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Yeah, I love that. I love that. Literally coming out of the gates, you started to have that experience, right? Of watching and observing how leadership and people at high level leadership roles, CEOs, C-suite, B-suite, started to carry themselves. What would you say would be, if we start out on, so we can have some contrast, because we're going to talk about the pressures of leadership. What would you say you noticed from observation and then from your own experience in those roles were some attributes to thriving in leadership? What are some of the takeaways for leaders to thrive?
Yeah, probably in my own advisory practice and when I reflect on my own journey, the single thing that comes up for me is this line, like, what got you here won't get you there. We are subject matter experts, right, in our own field of, like, wherever we came from, whether it's accounting or communications or marketing, you name it, we become this like subject matter expert. And the sort of the impulse as you move into leadership positions and move up into management is, oh, I just need to do that, except more and faster. But in fact, that's not it at all, of course. What we really need to do is learn how to delegate and scale. And that is the thing that I think I work with most people on, is letting go, allowing other people to do it, setting up accountabilities and agreements and guardrails and boundaries and all of those sorts of things. But no one's going to do it quite as good as you. And that's for two reasons. One, you've been doing it a long time and you're really great at it. And B, they're not you. They probably want to be able to do it their own way, put their own spin or flavor on it. And I think leaders that I work with eventually hit a point where the folks that are working for them surprise them. And they do it in new and different ways that maybe they had never done it themselves. And sometimes it's even better. So giving people the opportunity to discover their own path is, I think, a part of the leadership journey. And it's really hard at the start because we've become accustomed to being the expert, and that gives us that great dopamine hit. Let's dive in there and roll the sleeves up and be a hero and save the day. But it's not actually what allows a company to grow and scale. And it's actually no longer your job when you're a leader. Your job is to do strategy and to plan ahead and to get work done through other people. Like, literally the definition of management, right? Getting work done through other people. And that becomes something that I think everybody that struggles with at some point in their sort of ascent through the leader, and never more so than when you're a founder. I founded a company and grew a company for 10 years and sold it. And of course, I was the only person there, added people in. And that was my journey too. Even though I knew these things intellectually, actually doing it myself, of course, was hard as well.
Yeah, I love in what you're sharing. It's funny, I'm reading this book right now called How to Buy Back Your Time. For leaders, right? Because what you just shared, I think, is really important, because in leadership, as we grow, so let's just say we're talking to solopreneurs, for example, you start your business, you know, you're everything. You're the marketing, you're the sales, you're the planning, the strategy, right? It's like you're wearing all of the hats. And then as your business grows, you start to delegate, you start to hire out help, you start to hire people. And then you said you've got it. It's like letting go of control. Yeah, you might be the expert, yet giving other people the opportunity to hire and have them be the expert in their field so you can have some time. And so I'm curious, because this is what I heard as you were sharing, because I'm reading that book right now, is that it also allows you to free up your time to go and do what you're best at as a leader. Yet what you said was really important, is that it's really important to allow a lot of the responsibility to get done through other people, which requires us to learn to let go. So can you maybe just share, as a leader, how do we empower our team to do that? What are some tips as a leader to do that? And to actually, because you can just say, hey, stop being in control of everything. But that's not an easy thing to do when you're the leader.
That's great. And I'm a solopreneur these days myself. I primarily work alone. I work with some colleagues from time to time on projects. Mm-hmm. But I think that I take all the things that I learned when I was growing a company and I still apply them, which I think is your question. Allowing people, like, everyone wants to do a good job. And so people show up and they need to understand deeply what it is that's being asked of. And you've got secrets in your head about how this should go. And you end up, when we delegate, mostly it feels like a dump of information to the person on the receiving end. And actually, all you've done is described about 50% of it. And it's one way, right? I want you to do this. We've got to get this thing done by, do this, and then don't forget this. And I missed this part, and do that. And so the person that receives this, and they want to please you, so they're going, oh, okay. And so you're like, cool, I did it. Like, I've expressed what I want and what I need, and their body language tells me that they heard it and that they're going to do it. And then this person does their best And there's 12 other things on their plate as well. And they're juggling and they're guessing and they're filling in some gaps and they're not totally sure and they don't want to disappoint you. And so they wait until the last minute and then it's after the last minute and they deliver something that's only half done. And you're like, I thought I said all the things. Now, like, there's no time left. I'm going to have to do it myself now. So I swoop in and save the day. Makes me feel great because I'm a hero and no one can do it as well as me. But we set that person up for failure. Mm-hmm. And so there's a different way of thinking about those moments. And really what it is, instead of a dump, it's really building an agreement with the person. So we need to sit down and we need to just pinging information at them, turn it into a conversation that's mostly questions from your perspective. So it sounds, okay, so we have to get this thing done by next Thursday. How do you think we should go about doing that work? And then just say nothing. Just wait. And the person's going to look at you like, usually you tell me what to do. But in this case, you're just quiet. And they're like, I guess like we need to make a to-do list. Cool. What should be on the to-do list? And you wait. And they're like, probably we need to figure out how much budget we've got and then maybe do a work back plan. Great. Tell me what those things are. And so as you go through this process, you're seeing the way their brain is working, how they're chunking up the work. You're not inserting yourself into it. You're just holding like a container for them to fill it up. They're the one writing it down, not you. At the end of it, you want them to email you that because you want to see what they've come up with and what they actually wrote down. And so they get to, as the chefs say, you can do it two ways. They get to say it and then they get to write it. And the chances of it getting in there go up. And that agreement building means that person, it feels to them like it was their idea. It feels like they generated this work plan themselves. And so they've got skin in the game. They are way more into it. They feel ownership and some accountability that is upper level because it came out of their mouth, not yours. Mm-hmm. And when we build agreements with people, the outcomes are better. For sure, as I said, the accountability is deeper. And I spend a lot of time helping folks to shift their mindset around how to do delegation work and how to build agreements with people because they're just more effective. And it does take a long time because that's not how it worked for us when we were coming up. We just had work dump on us. So it's a bit of a mindset shift, but when you get there, it's great. It really works.
Yeah, I love that. Because you have, like you said, you have better buy-in, right, from your team. Yep. They feel empowered. It takes the pressure. We're speaking of pressure. It takes the pressure off of us. And by the way, like, I feel if you hire right, usually the people in those roles that you hired them for a reason, because usually, hopefully, they're better at you at that than you are, right? So it's giving them also, right, the leeway to come up with their own solutions to have it get done. And then plus two, you don't have to live in reaction as a leader, which I think we do a lot of the times too, which can get exhausting and overwhelming. I'm curious when it comes to the inner pressures of leadership, because I don't think that's talked a lot about, right? Like we have these external expectations, but there's a lot of inner pressure, no matter what level of leadership you're at, if you're a leader. I feel that can be super isolating at times as a leader. What do you see as some of the inner pressures that most leaders face, but rarely talk about?
Their own standard that they're holding against. I do a bunch of different kinds of work. And so when I'm working one-on-one as an advisor, I often talk about a kind of triple loop. Sometimes we'll be in a first loop, which is the doing loop. This is all the leadership and management stuff that I just talked about, right? The next loop is the thinking loop. And it's about how we do strategy, how we plan ahead. And the final one is the being loop, which is really our ethical model. And this is the deeper work that we do as leaders. And it's in that kind of ethical model that some of these stories that we deeply tell ourselves about what success looks like, that's where that comes up. And I'll often ask a question that's, I'm not a therapist. I don't do mommy, daddy stuff, nothing like that. But I do like to ask questions like, where are these standards coming from? And it's enough if they say, oh, it was my dad. He was a really like super hardworking person, whatever else. Or I got that in school, or I don't know. It's just a part of me. Connecting whose voice that is and where that story comes from to what's going on for you right now is often stress relieving, because you can start to notice when those stories come up for you and you can start to say, okay, maybe I'm being unfair or too hard on myself. Maybe I need more gratitude. maybe I need to just slow down and appreciate the sorts of things or be in the moment a little more. Business is isolating, to your point. It is really hard to be alone. There's only so much you can say to your spouse at the end of the day without being boring about work stories. If you have investors or a board of directors, there's only so much you can tell them without freaking them out because they just want their dough back. Or they, if you're a nonprofit leader, they just want to make sure that you're on it and doing a great job. And of course, there's only so much you can tell your staff without worrying everybody. They want to think that you've got it, right? Yeah. And so what do? We keep it to ourselves and we bottle it up. And after a while, so what do? I think we find people like you and I that do this kind of work and are able to hold space and allow folks to work through where they're at and how they're feeling. And these things are cyclical and we never totally solve them for ourselves. But the more present we become of how we behave and how we react in these moments, the more we can stay regulated and the more we understand and learn about the kind of leader we are and when we're in our best leadership headspace. And maybe when we're doing less and we need more supports around us.
Yeah. And what advice would you give someone who's maybe feeling the pressure and it is building, or they're in overwhelm, or they're just like in reactive mode and close to that burnout, like it's bubbling? What would be a piece of advice that you would give someone who's in that space just to alleviate that? Or what would you do?
Yeah. I think it's probably three things. The first is, we always feel like we're too busy to plan ahead. Like when that happens, your headspace is, I'm just hustling. And if words come out of your mouth, I just need to get to the end of 2 weeks from now. I just need to get to the end of May. I just need to get, right? If you're doing that, then you're not in control of your time or your focus. It's controlling you. So there's some things that you need to put in. One, in the same way that in the green room we were chatting and you're baking in some personal workout time, we need to bake in personal reflection time. So maybe that's you see a therapist. Maybe that's you are a part of a CEO roundtable group. Maybe you have a coach or an advisor that you spend time with. Don't make it ad hoc. Bake it in every 2 weeks, whatever the right cadence is for you. Reserve yourself the time so you can have energy in the tank and a chance to hear yourself talk, hear yourself think, find out what's going on for other people like you. That recharge time, it feels like you're quote unquote wasting time. It's the opposite. You're making sure that you've got what it takes to be able to go forward. And that's the first thing. The second thing is when people come to me with overwhelm, I'm like, cool, when's your next vacation? Especially when they work for themselves, they'll be like, yeah, sorry, that's for other people. Vacations are for other people. And I'm like, look, I'm pretty sure part of the dream was to have work-life balance and you were going to take vacations, you were going to do all this stuff. And now you're in it and you're doing nothing. So let's go back to the old you that planned this out at the start and let's reconnect with that person. So vacations will never happen if you don't plan them. And so what I like to say is look at the year ahead and book off your whatever you're going to give yourself, your 4 weeks, put them in your calendar now. You can't delete them. You're only allowed to move them. Because, of course, we don't really know when we're going to take that 1 week off. But if I keep moving them towards the end of the year, they're going to gang up. And then eventually I'm going to have the whole of December off. And so that's not going to happen. So I will eventually start taking the weeks off. So if you hold yourself accountable to that, communicate that to the people around you. I'm taking 4 weeks this year. Make sure I do. And set a good example. If you're not the only person on your team, everyone is watching you. So you can walk around saying, oh, we all need to take our vacations. It's a liability on the balance sheet if you don't all take your vacations. Like bosses say stuff like that. And then everybody that's working there, look at them and they're like, dude, you never take vacation. So I'm just doing what you're doing. And so that's super important. And I think the third thing is to just stay curious and learn. I think that we forget to learn when we're in reactionary mode. We just get in the do mode and we don't stay curious. We don't read books. We don't listen to podcasts. We just hunker down. Everything's, I got to do the slide deck. I got to write the report. I got to prep for the meeting. And having those like external stimuluses to spark creativity, that's also what tends to open up the space or just to feel well at work. So there are three things that I'm thinking.
No, I like those. I like those strategies because it's about setting yourself up to win, to be proactive. Because when you're in the thick of it, you may not, like you said, push pause and take reflective time, or, hey, this is a great time for a vacation. That's usually not what comes to mind. And then obviously staying curious, like you said. And the truth is, as a leader, you are taking people with you. And the question is, where are you going? Because people are following, to your point, that everyone's watching you. And so in that regard, I'm curious what you would say around how do leaders of whether it's organizations, of their own business, whatever it is, how do they stay connected to the purpose and values that they've set up for themselves in the organization under this constant pressure to perform, to get results, to show up? So how do they keep that at the forefront of things?
I think that it's a lens through which we need to view most of what we do as leaders. Our values are our drivers, and those ethical moments, they tend to come up and they test us. And they test how willing we are to walk away from that job that isn't going to be inspiring, or to say, it happens to me from time to time, just to be completely honest. Like I'm at the nice end of my career and I got lots of clients and I can do all the things, but sometimes clients come along and somebody refers somebody to me and I'm like, this doesn't feel like the perfect fit for me. It's not a sector I really know a lot about, or maybe the personality of the person isn't quite great or whatever. So I try to pay attention to that, and I like to refer people out. And it makes me feel good to gift somebody who I think in my network will be a better fit for this person and will do better work. And so I think that those values have to live, and they're only as good. We can write all the value statements and the mission and vision statements that we want, but it's not until we test them that they're for real. And I think that we know deep down, the only person that really knows if we're living our values is us. And they're only like at the pointy end of the stick, as it were, when they come into play. And so, I don't know, like for me, it's often when somebody will like try and hire me for a job and I'll think, I do a lot of social purpose business stuff. And sometimes there's just people that are just like purely in it for them. Profit driven myself, but like some people are just like egregiously in it for money, and I don't resonate with that. If there's not some underlying purpose, if we're not including people and building healthy workplaces and caring about our customers and clients, I can't get into that. And so that's when my moment comes up and I'm like, nope, walking away from that money, that's for somebody else that was going to be more aligned.
Yeah, no doubt. It's like when you know your values as you're sharing, it just helps you make decisions when you're in those situations. Exactly. It just makes it easier. You don't have to second guess yourself. And sometimes that's when it's tough to make those decisions when you're up against it, right? Or you need the money or something's going on, but staying true to your values, it's so important.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. So there's this funny little thing that happens to consultants and coaches and advisors and stuff. It's like you get asked to work with somebody and you're like, I'm not sure I really want this. And so you give them like, am I allowed to swear?
Yeah.
Yeah. You give them the fuck off price. And so it's like triple what you would normally charge. And I can tell you every time you do that, they'll take it. And it's a nightmare because of course, then you have to do it because you're like, oh, I'm doing it for the money. And it's who even am I now? And it's just a terrible sort of feeling to have. I'm at the point now where I don't do that. I genuinely, if I'm like, that job would only be for the money, then that means that, Jonathan, that job is for you. Come on, babe. It's just going to rob you of time to serve three other people at an appropriate price that, you know, you actually can serve and can do a nice job with. Like the younger me, I did that lots of times and 100% of the time I regretted it. And you're like, here's a lesson I don't need to learn yet again. And yet you do it because you think, well, I got to make payroll or I got it. So I don't know, pay a lot of attention to that stuff. Whenever you're doing that, it's deep down.
So true. I'm just laughing because that just happened last week. I also helped my brother with his business. He has a painting contracting business and a job came up. He's like, I don't want to do that job. We'll just hike the price way up.
Did he get it?
I don't know yet, but we put in a bid, right?
So he'll probably win it now.
Yeah, that just happened with him. And I know he'll get it and be like, dang it, I didn't want it.
It happens. I think, you know what? I think this is just sales psychology, but when you come in there with that amount of nonchalance and that amount of kind of like, whatever, people want you more. And so it must be good if he's that expensive, right? And you get into that sort of stuff, which is, look, there's some good lessons there, I think, around pricing and other stuff maybe for another day, but it's just a good thing to pay attention
That's
to.
That's too funny. Great example, though, right? At the end of the day, like, just, yeah, trust your values, follow those. It'll never lead you in a wrong direction. So yeah. I'm curious, right? Because we talk, and something you're really great at is just helping leaders and organization face tough obstacles, face tough decisions. So how do you help leaders move in these scenarios, speaking about this, from by accident making decisions that don't serve them because they're in reactive mode? So how do you help them move from that into like creative, strategic thinking?
Yeah. And so this is the part, like, I use coaching as a tool, but I don't actually call myself a coach. I really call myself an advisor. And that's because I give too much advice to call myself a coach. With all due respect to the coaches out there, I have another lane. And what you're talking about is where I think where I shine. Begin by asking a ton of questions. What have you already tried? What's worked? What isn't working? What's on your mind? And I'll pull as much good stuff. If I'm pretty sure that there's no way that I can just lead the witness and get them there, I'll then switch to more advisory mode. So I've seen this done. What's coming up for me is, I think we should game it out this way. And if it's a personnel problem or a conflict problem, I'll literally script how to have a difficult conversation with people. Call me all the time to help them fire people. Oof, it's awful, but I help people have really hard conversations because it's never going to get better. And they've already been living with it for long enough, and they just need to do it. And so I will sometimes help them with the decision itself, and I can feel it. It'll be in like session 3, and they'll be like, oh my God, I really need to let them go. I'm like, you do. It's not working. The conditions for success just are not here. Nothing you've told me, like, your heart's not in it. You literally don't think that they can succeed from here. Waiting until next year is only going to make things worse. Like, what about tomorrow? And then it hits them that they have to do this. And so we can work through it. It's awful. No one wants to do that. But everyone around this leader is watching them not act. The company or the organization is struggling because there's somebody there that ought not be there for whatever reason. These are some of the most complicated and difficult decisions to go through. So I help lots of people with that. Sometimes it's just doing strategy work. So the product or service is maybe stalling, or maybe it's not fully achieving properly, or maybe it's even pointed down and to the right. And what do? We game it out and we think of new and innovative ways to build out product models or service models. I redesign business models all the time with folks. It's really fun work, really interesting, really creative work. And mostly it begins with the truth, which is, this isn't working. And they've tried a lot of stuff and they're really committed to all the things that they've tried, but it's not working. And it's like, for how much longer do you want to see that flat line go across, or the gentle decline? Like, in the nonprofit sector, I do lots of work with nonprofits as well. And yeah, there's lots they can do with cash flow and the way that they're funded to just coast and lose a couple percent every year for a very long time and hide it. And so retooling those organizations and those businesses to find a way through that's going to be profitable and positive and growing is really wonderful. It's the best part of my work, and I really love helping leaders like design that stuff. And it's usually the stuff that keeps them at night that I'm really helping with.
Yeah. And you're sitting here speaking about how you help leaders, and where my mind is going is, this is amazing. And I think that it's so important to have someone to bounce ideas off of, to see your blind spots, to help alleviate some of this pressure. Yet leaders, a lot of times, are pretty stubborn, and they don't like to let people know that, one, they even have problems in the first place.
Yeah.
And so what's a recommendation you'd have for those leaders that are listening, where it's step number one would probably be allowing support in, letting your ego go, alleviating some of that pride and saying, I need some help. Like, how do we help those leaders get to that place in the first place?
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. Maybe ask yourself, what if the biggest problem in my life right now wasn't a problem? What would I do? Because the folks around you, you pay them, right? They'll tell you whatever you think that they figure out that you want to hear, right? Like, they've got mortgages and rent to pay and bills and stuff. And on some level, they will only challenge you to a degree. Unless you happen to be a really sophisticated large company with people working for you that genuinely have independent means and can actually tell you the super duper truth. So, you know, why folks hire somebody like myself or yourself is because they need a kind of truth that they can't get, appropriately so. It's not, no knock on people working for folks. It's on some level, what am I going to do? Tell my boss he's wrongheaded. It's quite hard to do that. And so that's, I think, where I can do really good work, is where nobody else can say the hard thing. I can go, look, that's not working at all. Shouldn't you change it? Let's do that. Let's figure it out. And that, it is hard, to your point, right? Nobody wants to admit that the thing that they've tipped a lot of time, money, and energy into just isn't working. And I do the feelings part as well, right? Like I do a lot of empathetic work with people, and people have big emotions, and people cry all the time working with me, and it's okay. It's totally okay. And we do the hard, the shameful thing, like, oh my God, and the money and the things and the people. And like yet, like, there's going to be a pathway through it. We will find a way through this somehow. It will take time, and we'll have to make a whole series of moves, but we'll somehow get through it.
Yeah. Hey. And so what would be some, speaking of this, right, what would be some recommendations? I know this is a general, more of a, it's probably very specific depending on what's going on for people, but what are some practices or mindsets to adopt that you believe help leaders not crumble to pressure, but grow from it, right? So when this stuff comes up, what's some good mindset tips or practices that anyone can adopt when pressures arise in that they choose to grow from it versus shrink?
Yeah, it depends on the stories you're telling yourself. If you're spiraling, just to stop the spiral and notice you're spiraling, and to say, like, this mindset that I'm in right now, I can see myself telling myself a series of stories that I'm not good and that here I go again. That's a pretty common thing that folks do. Remember to celebrate how far you have come. Are you really not better than you were 5 years ago? Really? What have you learned? How far have you come? What have you done? If you're struggling right now in your business, 5 years ago, you hadn't started a business, and the biggest thing that you did 3 years ago was start a business. You're like, you started a business. You were brave enough to put your name out there, to put your idea out there. You put your money into it. Maybe you had to borrow some money to put into it. Like, that was gutsy. And you did it. And okay, so you're hitting a dry spot. This is tough right now. But it doesn't mean that you suck. It means that you're hitting a tough spot. Welcome to business. That always happens. And so this is just new for you. Or it hasn't taken off in the way that you had hoped. And so maybe we just need to come at it from a different perspective, or try some different things, or cut costs, or add a new product line in, or whatever we're doing, right? Like, we just need to figure out the next thing. So there's some of the things that I think, like, mindset-wise, is to just find some loving kindness for yourself, because life is hard, and you're going to be okay, and you will get through this. And you just need to come into alignment with what the truth is of the moment, but that doesn't dictate who you are. It's not your identity. It's just the circumstances that you're in right now.
Yeah, no, I love that. As you're speaking too, I'm just sitting here thinking about leadership, because I think you've worked with leaderships like massive organizations, like you've been on board. So you've worked with like monster leaders. I'm just curious, because I mostly work with like solo entrepreneurs, leaders of like their own businesses. So not as big as yourself. Yet one common theme that pops up over and over again, it doesn't matter how much from the outside looking in the person looks like they are this strong leader. There's this level of self-doubt. There's this level of not believing in themselves and having to constantly reconnect with their vision and what they're doing and the belief of their purpose and all of that. Yeah. Is that across all boards? And what would you say to a leader who's found themselves in this role, yet they don't quite believe they're in themselves to follow through on it, but they've got that role? Because I think leadership is this constant, I've got this, I'm doing it, I'm the person. Holy crap, how am I here? Why am I the person? Can I actually do it? It's this battle on the inside of believing that we're the leader, that we like show. And I hate that saying, fake it till you make it. I don't know. I don't like that saying, but like, how do leaders show up in their belief in themselves, like when it's this constant inside battle within themselves? And I'm curious if you find that with a lot of the top C-suite leaders you deal with who look like they have it together, but are they struggling as well with their belief?
I think everybody struggles at some time or another. I think the more mature a leader gets, the more able they're able to say the following sentence, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's hard to do, because, you know, when you're hustling yourself and you're either a corporate ladder or you're brave enough to hang out a shingle and be a solopreneur, you have to self-generate a lot of belief. Like, it's got to be somewhere, and you have to do it yourself. And so the opposite of that feels to say, I don't. But that level of vulnerability tends to draw people in. You tend to enroll people around you into your cause and create a followership when you're vulnerable and you're able to say, I've never done this before. Has anybody else done this? Has anybody come up against this? Like, So I don't actively look to work with solopreneurs, but at any given time, I've got three or four that I work with. And it's typically like, I thought I've left corporate and I thought this was going to be great. And it's 18 months in and I don't know what to do, Jonathan. And I go, like, I can teach you how to build a solopreneur business, like how I do it. And this is how I do it. So I'm happy to tell you how that, if that's how you want to build it, because there's lots of different ways of doing it, then totally happy to do that. I have a pretty old school approach. Like I create referrals and it's inbound and I use and leverage networks. I'm not big into digital marketing and digital funnels and stuff like that. I think there's lots of people that know how to do that and they sell things on the internet for $49.99. I don't. Cost money to work with me and no one's going to pay me that kind of money unless they believe that I can genuinely help them and they're all in. It's a completely different kind of business that I run, but for folks that run similar kinds of businesses, in professional services, I'll walk with them and teach them to do that, especially if I think that they're a cool human that is really genuinely going to help people and do some really good stuff. And so how do you keep motivated when you're it, right? Like you got to self-generate your own belief, right? And so it's not, I agree with you. I don't really fake it till you make it either. That feels, I don't know, like from the 80s or something, right? I think that it's really these days about how to just be really authentic, how to be genuine, how to enroll people into the thing that you are trying to build and that you're trying to do, whether it's your own career, whether it's a business, whatever it is, you want to draw people in. And some of that is just getting people to support you as a mentor, as a guide, with pieces of advice, with connections and networks, right? It's all positive if you are able to reframe that.
Yeah, for sure. I love that answer. Okay, before we start to wrap up, I'm curious, is there anything that you want to make sure we talk about when it comes to navigating the pressures of leadership?
I just think have a good group of folks around you that can walk your path with you. And the extent to which you can make it more formal than less formal, I'd encourage you to do that. I think that we are too quick to have, like, I'll tell you where this is coming from. From time to time, people say, Jonathan, you've been a great mentor to me. And I'll be like, have I? I thought we were colleagues. Like, I didn't know. And I'm like, I would have tried harder. I would have done more if I'd known I was being put in that esteem. And I've talked to other leaders that have felt the same way about that. So it's okay to say to somebody, you're doing things, you're 5 years further along than me. I am learning from you. I look at you as a mentor. How does that feel for you? Is that okay? If you make the implicit explicit, it will trigger something in that person's mind or those people around you to support you in more active ways, as opposed to you secretly trying to just gather up little bits of crumbs of whatever's around. And that's my sort of number one tip for people is to like create your personal board of directors, create people around you that believe in you and that support you and enroll them and activate them and tell them what you need from them. And just move in that way. They won't be the same as a coach or an advisor. They'll just be people that care for you and that are looking out for you. And maybe they've got good skills. Maybe they don't at doing this. But there's some reason that you're drawn to them and they're drawn to you. And you should just always have a group of people around you that are going to be there.
I love that. Create your own board of directors. I like that.
And yeah, it's not mine. That's an idea that's out there. It's a way of thinking about it. Do I have three or four people in my life that I check in with every month or two? And if so, what do they look like? Like I sit on advisory boards where like people are growing companies and what they're doing. They've basically got me and three other people that have been around a while to sit there and help them steer the thing and be a cheerleader.
Exactly. And that's an exercise in leadership as well, right? Having the courage and the foresight to do that in the first place. So I think that's so awesome. Jonathan, where can people find you? They're going to want to know more about you and just what you have to offer in terms of advisory and executive coaching. And I know you're going to have a link for us as well for something that you do. So maybe just chat a little bit about where can we find you and what is the link that we're going to put in the show notes here for the audience?
Yeah, so I'm really active on LinkedIn. So please reach out and feel free to follow me and connect on LinkedIn. Always like that. I write a couple times a week. And you can find me at clearlythen.com, which is my website. The thing that we're going to link to here is I have a private podcast series, and it's 6 recorded sessions of me doing work with real leaders. So I just found clients and former clients that were willing to do this. And we don't actually use their real names, but otherwise it's don't use their names at all throughout the podcasts, but it's actually a real session. So you get to hear me actually do real work with a leader and how we work through whatever their pressing problem of the day is. And so that's really helpful because sometimes it's hard to really know what it might be like to work with somebody like me. And this felt like the easiest way for me to say, show, don't tell, right? You can just like actually listen in to 6 totally different leaders, right? Construction people that are selling their company and brand new leaders that are moving out of student government into the workforce and like everything in between. And so you get a real sense of all the different things that I do. So please feel free to sign up. It's free and listen in to that.
I love that. That's brilliant. And such a great way to know what you do and also to learn. That's such a great way to learn, right? Observe an actual conversation. Everybody definitely check that out. We'll put that in the show notes. Yeah, Jonathan, you're awesome. You have so much experience. I love having my podcast so I can just learn as well selfishly from the guests that come on. And okay, I have 3 final questions to wrap things up.
Yep.
So my first question for you, you're at this next stage in your life. What would you say is your definition today of success for yourself?
Freedom. It's more freedom than ever before to be able to choose to work with who I want to work with, to sit on the boards that I want to sit on, and to spend time with family and to just have less pressure and to do better work. It's like a freedom and a quality thing. Like I can do more quality work when I've got more time to think, and I'm in far better equilibrium now than I've been before.
That's awesome. And congratulations for getting yourself to that space.
Thanks.
It only took 25 years. Exactly. I've just been saying to some of my friends lately, I've been having just ahas of life. And I was like, is this age or is this experience or is this just luck of the draw? What's going on? I think it's all of it.
Yeah, all of it.
I get it. Okay. So my podcast tagline is Unleashing Greatness Within. And so what would 3 tips be that you would give the listeners to unleash their inner greatness?
Understand who you are. So do the work, right? Whether that's therapeutic work, whether that's just meditation, whether it's journaling, just get to know yourself. That feels like the first thing. The second thing is let people know what you need. Like we just keep too many secrets. And we've got these hopes and dreams, but move it from this unspoken internal thing that we keep locked up and precious to letting the world know about it and expressing what you need, because there's a much better chance that somebody will be able to connect you with that thing or that dream if it's out there. And I suppose the third is just to be kind to yourself. Unleashing greatness is really about knowing that we can't be great all the time and that we screw up. And that hard things happen, and that just some gentleness and some kindness goes an awful long way, and it allows us to heal and to be just better, whether it's at work or.
I love that. Thank you for that. And then, okay, third one, based on our message today, right, of leadership, navigating the pressures of leadership, stepping into leadership, what would you say would be one call to action for the listeners to apply this week? So when they hop off this episode and hear our message, what's one thing they can do?
I think service is a huge thing that we need to all be thinking about. And one thing that if you're not sitting on a nonprofit board in your community or in the sector within, deeply consider. Why? Because there's no better way to be a leader than be on a board of directors. You're not too young. If you're in here and you're in your 20s, your 30s, and you're thinking, yeah, but I'm too young. No. Boards are desperate for young people to join them. They're trying to become more diverse. And there's a whole group of folks around board tables that just want young people to be able to mentor and grow with and learn from. You'll have so much to contribute. So I think that joining a board is the fastest accelerant to leadership that exists out there, and it's available to just about all of us in There's something like 188,000 nonprofits and charities in Canada, and there's all that many boards of directors. It's just a way for you to move into a seat that is elevated, even when you're not there in your career. You're maybe a brand new manager, or you're a coordinator, and you're like only 5 years in. You can sit on a local charity board of a healthcare or social service organization, or you name it, animal shelter, whatever is moving to your heart. And suddenly you're the boss of the boss. And the view that you will get from that table will change everything for you. So go for it.
Oh my, I love that call to action. I love that. I'm just sitting here thinking about that. Like, I thank you for that. That's really great advice. And especially if we're speaking about leadership, like you said, it's almost the highest level of leadership where you can step into and learn while you're growing in your own leadership with what you're doing elsewhere. And you get to be of service and you get to be in that space, which is...
Yeah, and it gives you a whole other set of things to talk about in your next job interview. Not just your job, but your board service as well. To a completely different kind of candidate. And so I spend a lot of time encouraging people to sit on nonprofit boards for all those reasons.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Thank you. Jonathan, thanks for being here today. And thanks for coming and just sharing some of your experience and wisdom and talking about leadership, and just really appreciate you and appreciate our time together. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Kelly, for having me. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Absolutely.
Hi, I'm Tanya and this is Julie, and we are the founders of Coach Corp, your all-in-one solution for building and scaling a successful coaching business.
At Coach Corp, we provide you with everything you need in one place. You can house your courses, manage memberships, run email campaigns, and create stunning websites and funnels, all with our easy-to-use platform.
And it's not just about the software. We offer built-in coaching and mentorship, helping you implement best practices from certified NLP practitioners and story brand coaches. And that's just scratching the surface of what's inside.
And that's why we're excited to sponsor the Entrepreneurial Elevation podcast with Kelly Beveridge. Kelly is a thought leader who inspires and elevates entrepreneurs worldwide.
We believe in the power of community and continuous learning, and this podcast is a fantastic resource for any coach looking to truly grow their practice.
So join us on this journey. Tune into the Entrepreneurial Elevation podcast for insights and inspiration, and visit Coach Corp to transform your coaching business today.
Coach Corp, your path to coaching success.